ladies and gentlemen, do me a favor, smash the television and burn the newspaper. That shit will never tell you that the president's a traitor. Believe what you want, but my evidence is greater. What you know about the Bilderberg and New World Order? What you know about the real fluoride in your water? What you know about the bleed of uranium in the mortar? What you know about AIPAC controlling the reporter? What's wrong with the world? People kill people that other people command. Middle East is a modern day attack on a native land. Project eugenics planned on the common man. Expand the military industrial complex. Annex or install you with chemical objects. Vex the psyop attacking your conscience. Next, your brain agrees with the offense. Political correctness, people are afraid to speak what they feel instead of what they're made. I don't see black and white, I see a...
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest, who's hailing from New Zealand, the fabulous, the fluoridated, the allegedly irradiated, I don't know, because they stopped testing for it, just like they don't test for pesticide levels often in the drinking water either, which is probably why they have about 1,000 times as much glyphosate allowed than they do under European drinking water standards, as well as not allowing fluoride in the EU. Am I missing something here? I mean, has anybody ever heard like a banana republic, like, you know, some country like way down the line, and everybody's just sitting around there just like taking all the old toxic waste from everybody else and just going, oh mate, this is great, this is new stuff, this is modern culture, you know, and then just basically getting poisoned and destroyed, you know, like some kind of form of imperial radioactive sodium poisonate scumbaggery colonization going on here? Is that what's going on? Of course it's what's going on here. Anyway, my very special guest is Mary Byrne from FANS, the Fluoride Action Network in New Zealand. Mary, welcome to the program.
Hi, buddy. How's things?
Yeah, somewhat fabulous. Standard response, you know.
We're actually Fluoride Free New Zealand now. We're calling ourselves that to sort of tie in with all the fluoride groups, and it sort of seems an easier name.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds Fluoride Free New Zealand.
Well, I reckon you should just say fluoride-free sanity or something. That way you could be known as FFS. Because often when you're against fluoride, you find yourself repeating those three letters in your brain for some reason whenever you see the rebuttals of the other side who don't have any sense.
Yeah, that's right. So I suppose, I mean, this why we're talking today is about the review by Professor Gluckman and Skeek from the Royal Society. So
so it was a male review? There were women with cash in hand, you know?
No. It's okay, so this is the fluoridation review, and really why they've done this is because to placate the New Zealand public, and because we had been having a lot of success over the last few years, and places like the Far North, Central Hawke's Bay, New Plymouth, Taumarunui had stopped, and there were other places where the council vote had been really close, like in Thames, you know, half and half, and then the mayor did a casting vote, and we were putting a lot of pressure on the councils, because we were able to go there with the, you know, when they had the draft annual plans, people can go along and they call it submit, you know, which means you're allowed to give feedback under their rules. And
wasn't that what was written on all the billboards and stuff like that when the guy put on the glasses and they live? Submit.
Yeah, it might have been, yeah. But, you know, I mean, you can see the terminology that's used to keep us in our place, you know. But
apparently, anyway, the Spartans had a problem with submissions.
Oh, right, okay. So we've been going along for a few years to a lot of the councils and encouraging people around the country to go. And once most people get to hear both sides of the story and get to hear the detail, it becomes apparent that fluoridation is ridiculous. It's actually ridiculous. But what happens is, you know, in New Zealand, most people don't get to hear both sides, and they don't get to hear the detail. And, you know, we all know that that's because our mainstream media does not help at all. And people like to believe the mainstream media. So anyway, because we'd been having a lot of success, I think they were kind of, the strategy of the fluoridationists was we hadn't caused enough trouble for them to worry about too much and that they didn't want to give the issue too much attention. But when Hamilton stopped, that was like the final straw, and they decided that we'd gone too far and that we were threatening fluoridation in New Zealand, which I'm sure that we were. I felt that with Hamilton stopping, we were probably 2 years off stopping throughout the whole of New Zealand.
I'd like a little picture or snapshot of you holding a fluoride bag by the hair or something like that and about to beat it, you know? Like.
Yeah. Well, but I really did think that, you know, with Hamilton, that was such a big domino, and the others were going to go after that.
I was ridiculously impressed, Mary, like, honestly, on behalf of everybody in Hamilton for a brief period of time. Thank you.
Yeah. And it wasn't amazing, though, eh? I mean, you know, Pat McNear, she did so much work getting that organised. And
they used dirty tactics on her. They, tried to accuse her of, like, I don't know, goodness knows what, like, insinuating dodgy business about her, around her changing her name. People change their names all the time.
Oh, that was about Anna Goodwin, the oncologist that spoke. So Pat McNear is, like, you know, the main fluoride activist in Hamilton. She's our fluoride-free coordinator. But Anna Goodwin was an oncologist, and she wasn't in our group or anything. And she, you know, found out about fluoridation because she went to a DHB grand rounds thing that they do, where they tell all the DHB staff what they're supposed to say and think.
And it sounds crazy, like they're out of their minds, like everybody's on GHB rather than at the DHB.
Yeah. And she became suspicious about it because in this forum that they went to, you know, they were all told that they weren't allowed to talk to the media, and anyone from the media had to leave, and all sorts of things like this. They weren't allowed to ask questions, and then Dr. Peter Scanlon did start to ask some questions, and they were really awful to him. So it piqued her interest, and then she went away and found out about it. So she came along and just gave an ordinary submission, I just hate that word, presentation to the council like the rest of us did, and then she became more involved with us. But then somebody found out, and, you know, they found out that she changed her name, and they put it on in the New Zealand Herald as if she was somebody dodgy. But, you know, all it was that she'd been divorced, and so she changed her name back to her maiden name, which is, you know, a pretty ordinary thing to do. But going back to the review, and over the last year, so since Hamilton stopped, I mean, we all saw what happened in Hamilton with the way the Waikato Times was just so completely pro-fluoridation.
It was exactly as Paul Connett predicted it months earlier. During his tour of New Zealand, he actually, I specifically cut out that part of his presentation that I filmed. He said, when you reject fluoridation, there will be a raft of attacks on any councillors or anything like that in order to get it back on the agenda.
Yeah, and that's what they did. So, and then it was, you know, TV3, TV1, everywhere you looked, there were just pro-fluoridation articles, and we found it really hard to get anything into the mainstream. And then it ended up, you know, having the referendum, which, you know, the Hamilton City Councillor should never have agreed to, and that vote was like a 7-6 vote. So six of the councillors at least had stuck to their guns at that point. But really, over the last year, the pro-fluoridation side have thrown everything at us that they can or that they could. So this latest review is like,
Just before we talk about the review, how much money was it that the DHB spent on their propaganda campaign to refluoridate Hamilton? I heard it was over $40,000 in taxpayer money.
Oh, it was more than $40,000. It was like $100,000. It was like $100,000 in Hamilton, and then there was at least $50,000 in Hastings for that one, and another $50,000 in Whakatane.
And you've managed to compete with them and get that stuff overthrown with donations of like hundreds of dollars and stuff. And you're like, oh.
Yeah, and then, I mean, that's just the DHB. We know that the New Zealand Dental Association contribute an awful lot to this campaign for whatever their reason is.
What have they got to gain from all of this? I mean, where's the justification for the spending of the money? Public health, you know? We've proven that it doesn't work for public health. So somebody's making money off of this. Who is it?
Yeah, somebody must be making money off it.
Where's the fluoride come from? How much does it cost? Is it pharmaceutical grade? What the heck is going on here?
Yeah, so just in case you have any listeners that don't know, you know, it gets scrubbed from the chimneys of the phosphate fertiliser industry, and it would be a toxic waste, but by selling it to us, they turn that cost into a profit. So it's not really that expensive to sell to the councils because they want to make sure they get rid of it, so they're not going to price themselves out. But I think that where the real sort of worry for the phosphate fertiliser industry comes in is that 4% of the phosphate fertiliser is fluoride. So I think that they're wanting to make sure that they keep fluoride known as something benign or, you know, it may be even beneficial, because if everybody was to admit that fluoride is just a hazardous chemical, I think then they would be required not to have the fluoride in their fertiliser as well.
Now, the phosphate fertiliser industry has literally mines that can be seen from space, ladies and gentlemen, in Florida, one of the very few kinds of operations that you can see from frickin' space. That's how huge this is.
Wow. And when we actually, even just, you know, the stuff they're getting rid of, in America, it's something like billions of dollars. You know, it is a huge amount of money. If you look worldwide about how much the phosphate fertilizer industry saves by sending us their toxic waste to drink for them, you know.
Well, then wouldn't it be in their industry's best interests to donate large sums to councils, dental associations, things of that nature in order to finance a propaganda campaign to brainwash all of those officials who can't even think for themselves anyway outside of the bureaucratic mindset to support fluoridation?
Mm. Well, it would be in their best interest. Whether or not it happens, I don't know. But, you know, of course it would be in their best interest to do that. Wouldn't it?
Ah, you never... I'm just taking a stab in the dark here, you know.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But where I see things, you know, going in New Zealand is that the pro-fluoridationists have now thrown everything that they can at us over the last year. So there's not much more they can throw at us now. The only thing they could do now more would be to make fluoridation mandatory throughout New Zealand. And I'm sure that there will be some people in New Zealand looking to do that. Whether or not that will get traction, I don't know. But if it doesn't go that way that they try to make it mandatory, then I think we'll start climbing back up the hill, you know, because they're throwing everything they can at us. So they can't keep doing a review every 3 months or, you know, what else can they throw at us? So I think we'll start getting...
You might jinx it, Mary.
Yeah, there's something I haven't thought about. But I mean,
I don't know. I mean, look at your enemy. Your enemy is not somebody who is. Okay, let's think about this. Mass poisoning of the population, including children, the elderly, the sick, the ill. You know, everybody. Okay. Mm. Does this strike you as a person who isn't a psychopath for some reason? What kind of rules do psychopaths actually play by? Pretty nasty ones, if any at all. So I think they'll throw anything and everything at you, and you won't be able to. You won't even see it coming because you'd never think of it.
So you think there's more to come?
There's always more. It's kind of psychopathy is kind of like Jell-O. There's always more room for it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, we just had this whole thing in Rotorua where they were looking at starting it. And, I mean, how crazy would that have been to start doing fluoridation now? You know? I mean, everybody knows that the claimed benefit is for topical application. You know, and last year in Hamilton we had Robin Wyman, who's a consultant to the National Fluoridation Information Service, explaining to the council how it's supposed to work, and he says, we know now it's surface contact to the tooth. And he says to the council and the audience, so I suppose everybody's wondering, well, why do we have to swallow it then? And we're all thinking, yeah, why would we have to swallow it then? And he says, because when you swallow it, it goes into your bones and it goes into your bloodstream and it gets stored into your bones and your soft tissue. And then during the day, it comes out of your bones, back through your blood and out of your salivary glands to provide a topical benefit. And I mean, it's so ludicrous, you know, when I've told people that they burst out laughing, thinking that surely I'm joking, you know. But this is honestly what he said, and we've got a transcript of it, and we've got a link to the video of him saying all of this. And where it gets even more bizarre is that fluoridated toothpaste is 1,000 parts per million. Child strength is 400 parts per million. And what they put in the water is 0.85 parts per million, and what comes out your salivary glands is 0.016 parts per million. Now, the Ministry of Health recommend that children use adult strength fluoridated toothpaste at 1,000 parts per million because they say 400 parts per million is not strong enough. So if 400 parts per million is not strong enough, how on earth is 0.016 parts per million coming out your salivary glands going to provide a topical benefit? That's just ludicrous for them to say that. And then the other aspect of it is, well, where's the rest of it gone? So what, it's being stored in your bones and your soft tissue? So which soft tissue?
And not to mention, where does it go if you don't drink it? I mean, I don't think humans drink the majority of the water that goes down the drain.
No, I think that we drink something like 0.1%. So, yeah, the rest of it is just going all over the place, you know, and into the sea. But a couple of things I wanted to say is, I'd listened to this guy called John Spencer a little while ago. He's this Australian pro-fluoridation dental researcher that came to New Zealand, and him and Jonathan Broadbent and I think it was Stephen Palmer, Medical Officer of Health down here in Wellington, they went around the country giving a show, you know, a presentation about how good fluoride is.
I love it how nobody gets the irony that there's a guy who's corrupt in a wide manner of ways is named Broadbent.
Yeah. anyway, he was saying that in Australia, they're trying to reduce the amount of dental fluorosis. So he was saying over there about 40% of the children have some form of dental fluorosis. Now in New Zealand, the studies show that it's around 30% in the fluoridated areas and 15% in the non-fluoridated areas. So obviously the toothpaste is causing some dental fluorosis and maybe other things, but the water fluoridation is causing 15% of children in fluoridated areas to get some form of dental fluorosis. Now in Australia they're saying that that's around 40%, and he says that that's an unacceptable level because when fluoridation was initiated, they thought that around 10% of children would have dental fluorosis. So they're embarking on programs to reduce dental fluorosis levels. So what they're doing with the toothpaste, so here in New Zealand we've got Plunkett giving out 1,000 parts per million to 6-month-old babies, and in Australia they're saying don't use a fluoridated toothpaste until the child's 2, and then only use a smear of child strength until about 6. Now, they're saying that because they want to reduce dental fluorosis. Now, why do they want to reduce dental fluorosis when we're consistently told that it doesn't matter? That dental fluorosis is just cosmetic and it doesn't look that bad. You know, no one's got severe dental fluorosis, so why worry about it? So why are they bothering to try and reduce dental fluorosis?
Well, maybe because they're crazy. It's a local terminology called dental neurosis.
But then if they think that dental fluorosis is unacceptable, then why is it acceptable for 10% of children to have it? Why do they only want to get it down to 10% and not 0 if it's not okay? So either it's okay or it's not, isn't it? And then the other thing about that is that if they just stopped water fluoridation, they would reduce dental fluorosis. So why don't they just stop water fluoridation? But no, they decide to have a program where they go out and they're telling the parents about toothpaste and they're trying to change behaviour. But they say that we have to have water fluoridation and not just teach parents how to brush their teeth, because that would require a change in behaviour. So it seems that to reduce dental fluorosis, we can have programs to change behaviour, but to reduce dental decay, we can't.
It's like killing somebody to prevent. It's like killing somebody to prevent murder.
Yeah, and but they essentially would be the same programs, wouldn't they? It's about toothbrushing. So they can have a program on toothbrushing to reduce dental fluorosis, but they can't have a program around toothbrushing to prevent dental decay. I mean, the whole thing is just so backward and upside down. It's nonsensical. You know what I mean? None of their arguments actually make any logical sense.
Didn't Orwell say that this was like one of the techniques of mind control, doublespeak or something like that?
Oh, I mean, it's so frustrating that they could get away with saying such nonsensical things, you know, and giving such illogical answers. Because if they want to reduce dental fluorosis, the obvious thing to do would be to stop water fluoridation. That would be the obvious thing to do.
I appreciate the irony that those of us with a differing opinion from those authorities who are clearly insane, we get called nuts for just, in some cases, just quoting what they've said and stating how blatantly crazy it is. You know, how can I be crazy for saying somebody else is crazy? That's crazy.
I know. And I mean, you know, the fact is all we're wanting is to have our water
toxin-free?
In its purest, well, not medicated. You know, no, not medicated and not had a poison added to it. You know, I mean, is it even a medication since it doesn't actually do any good? I don't know. You know, I mean, its purpose is presumably, you know, to medicate us. And another little thing I'd just like to add for people to know is that this review, in the summary, they say that Jonathan Broadbent's study from Dunedin proves that fluoride doesn't reduce IQ. But the thing is with Jonathan Broadbent's study is that what he had was he had 891 children in the fluoridated area and 99 children in the non-fluoridated area. So for starters, that's a big difference, and 99 children wouldn't actually be enough to make the study robust. But then he also gives figures for how many children were taking fluoridated tablets. So he had 139 were taking tablets, 763 weren't, and then there were 90 they didn't know. But if we look at, there were 99 in the non-fluoridated area and then there were 139 taking fluoridated tablets. So obviously some of the children taking fluoridated tablets lived in fluoridated areas, but we would expect that most of the kids taking fluoridated tablets lived in the non-fluoridated areas. So we've been writing to Jonathan Broadbent to tell us how many of the kids in the non-fluoridated areas were on fluoride tablets. Because if you compare children in fluoridated areas to children who are taking fluoridated tablets, then we're not comparing anything. All we're comparing is people on fluoride. There's no comparison to be made. So you can't say we can't say there was no difference in IQ because we don't have two different samples. We actually just have the same sample. They're probably all getting about the same amount of fluoride. So how could he say that there was no difference in IQ or anything?
Where do they get approval for the experimentation on children with hazardous toxic waste?
That's right, if they don't know already, isn't it? So the whole thing's an experiment, isn't it? And this is another thing about old Gluckman's review. It's not as if he's gone and done any study. It's not, you know, as if he's gone and got looked at data over years to see, has asthma rates gone up in New Zealand? You know, do we have more bone fractures, particularly, you know, in the fluoridated areas? What about hip fractures? There's no studies done in New Zealand. The only studies they ever do is looking at dental decay, and when they do those studies properly, it shows there's no difference between fluoridated and non-fluoridated. The difference is dental fluorosis. So then they went and did an oral health survey in 2009, and this is where they get the 40% reduction in decay that they they spread all around the country. But the where this got published in the Our Oral Health, the Ministry of Health publication, it says that this was just a snapshot in time, so you can't use that publication as a fluoridation study. And they only had about 60 children in each age group, whereas if you go to the New Zealand dental school statistics, they have about 45,000 in the 5-year-olds and the 12-year-olds. And when you look at that, you see that it's sort of all over the place. You know, some fluoridated areas are better, some non-fluoridated areas are better, but there's definitely no, you can't look at that and go, oh, yes, definitely, fluoridation's good, you know. So they're just making it up. You know, they had to go and do a survey that even their own publication says shouldn't be used as fluoridation study. And then they go and use that.
Well, you know what they say, in a lack of available evidence, just make something up and placate the public with it and repeat it several times. And then they'll admit it, and that way you can continue to keep getting your payoffs from the phosphate fertilizer industry in a roundabout, untraceable kind of fashion so they don't find out about it. Thank you very much, Mary Byrne.
Okay. Okay, Benny.
Would you be able to give us a quick plug for your websites and any Facebook pages or any other things you think people should take a quick look at?
Oh, yeah. Fluoridefree.org.nz is our website, and fluoridefree.nz is the Facebook page. So, yep, we'd really appreciate people going in and getting more information and liking our Facebook page and passing it around, you know, sharing it with their friends.
Yeah, information's quite a powerful thing, ladies and gentlemen, and you may or may not realise this, but every single person that hears a piece of information like this might just have a chance at learning something for a change. So,
thanks a lot, Vinny.
Thank you, Mary. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show. This is listener-supported radio. And if you will, please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question. And Eastwood isn't go ahead, make my news. And go ahead, make a donation or start up a regular automatic payment today.